Okay, great. We'll get started. We like to record these because we have about 250 people on our participant list, and they get notices, pre and post session notes. And of course, if you have not gotten one, someone just joined.
Yeah, this is Alma. I just dialed back in because it was
okay.
Listening.
Is that a little bit better for you?
Oh, it's perfect now.
Good.
Thank you.
We do these PLC calls. Someone just joined. Okay. We do these calls every 2 weeks. Our next one will be on the 10th of September. Actually, Cammie, I believe Fortune Society is going to do that one, September 10th.
Probably. I am an interloper here. I'm from the development department. So
okay.
Laura Sankovich is our goddess of,
yes.
Laura, of all arranging.
Laura told me she said they'd like to do it on the 10th. So we're going to talk to your group on the 10th. She's
wonderful.
Going to do a presentation. And then on 24th, we're going to have Zender Environmental from Alaska. So it's quite different. You're in New York, fairly urbanized, and Alaska is probably the most rural
right.
Brownfield we've ever had. What we try to do is contrast different types of job training programs so people get an idea of what it's like in an urban job training program, what it's like in a rural program, what it's like in where you've got heavy organized labor, where you are like in a right-to-work state. And what we've done, we've had four of these sessions. This is the fifth PLC out of 10. We do these in cycles of 10, and then we start again. And the first four, we had an interesting mix. We had three urban. We had St. Nick's, and we started off with Cypress Mandela up in Oakland, and he's probably extremely busy right now with the earthquakes. We had also the Brooklyn group. Someone just joined?
This is Jeff in Region 3.
Region 3, okay. Welcome.
Hi.
And then we had Memphis Bioworks, which was less urban and more of a right-to-work type of environment in Tennessee. And so we try to get a mix. And then we had Hunter's Point, which is in San Francisco, again, heavily organized. And one of the things we wanted to do, we do several of these presentations by grantees, and then we try to summarize and maybe have a little bit of discussion about what we found out. And then we go back to talk to more grantees and try to get an idea of what other people are doing and how it might influence our program. And we have a mix of mentors. These are grantees. And we have people that have not got grants and maybe are thinking of setting up a job training program, haven't yet. People like Randy, who is thinking of a program. We've had, and many times people will listen to the calls and it'll help them in either writing their proposal or maybe even deciding it's not something they want to do right now. The next RFP actually will be coming out probably the end of this year with a spring award. These are annual grants. Someone just joined? Okay. We had some people join?
Yeah, this is Ellie Brewer from MOCAN.
Okay.
And Janice Spearman from MOCAN.
Okay, great. Welcome. Up in, you ought to be getting some beautiful weather up there.
Oh, yeah. Cloudy.
Oh, okay. You're in Missouri, right? Kansas City,
correct.
Missouri area. That's great. One of the things we always start out with, and these are very informal calls, as you're seeing, we always start out with news from Washington, but Joe Brosa, who is our project officer and heads up the Brownfields job training program in Washington, is on vacation. He's in Europe right now, so we don't have news from Washington, but we have some sorts of news that we want to make some announcements. And then I'd like to talk about the NIHS program, which we've had some questions about too. So one of the things that we want to announce is the all grantee meeting And I'll let Glow talk a little bit about this. It's going to be on the October 21st to the 24th. And all PLC members are invited. So if you're thinking of setting up a program and you're a PLC member, which means you're on the list and you get these announcements, you're welcome to attend this meeting. And Glow, do you want to tell us a little bit about the annual grantee meeting?
Yes. Like Mike said, the meeting is from the 21st to the 24th. Actually, the meeting dates are the 22nd and the 23rd. On the 21st, we're just going to do an evening check-in. All PLC members that are active in the PLC are invited to attend. And I have put this announcement out on the listserv. So everyone that's on the call should have received that invitation. But if not, please email me. Which, Mike, you want to put that in the post-session notes when you send that out?
Okay.
Put my contact information. What this is a gathering of all the past and present job training, EPA-funded job training grantees who come together and share ideas, lessons learned, network with each other, and just try to help each other build the best job training program as possible. We also all have... excuse me, I have problems with my sinuses today. We also have a representative from all 10 EPA regions and from headquarters that attend, so the grantees can network with their project officers or headquarters people. We're going to be having lots of department overviews from EPA headquarters. And then the rest of the meeting is a lot of workshops where everyone is just going to be networking. It's all informal discussions, presentations, that type of thing, so that people just learn from each other. It's a great meeting. So if you have any interest in building a job training program, this would be a good place to start. You'd learn a lot here.
The assistant administrator of EPA will be there as well as his subordinate who heads up the OSWR, Office of Solid Waste Emergency Response, as well as Joe, who is in charge of the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program, as well as all the regional coordinators will be there. And we arrange everyone by their region. So if you've got a grant, it's a great time to get to know your regional coordinator. If you don't have a grant, it's good to know. It's really good to know them because it'll put a face on who you may wish to contact and tell them you're interested in you're in the PLC and you're really interested in setting up a program. And contrary to what some people think, the regional coordinators really like to know who in their region is submitting, so they could keep in touch, and maybe they could help you, and they could maybe put you in touch with people in the regions that will be benefit in terms of writing your grant. So it's really good to know your regional coordinator. Also this week, we've noticed, I think about four of the grantees have had personnel changes this summer. And one of the things I would remind you, if you're a grantee and you've got personnel changes, particularly some of the people that may have been old-timers who have moved to different jobs, contact your regional coordinator because they like to keep up with who's the best contact. There have been situations where they've kind of lost contact with the key person that is working on the program. So it would be good to just drop them an email and let them know that you've got a change in personnel, and if they want to get in touch with somebody quickly, this would be the person that's taking over that they should keep in touch with. So that's an important thing that you should keep in mind. So it is a very good annual meeting. It's a great thing to go to, as well as some other announcements we're going to put into the post-session notes. The CCCHST, this is it's kind of a boot camp for people who train in health and safety, and as well as the annual Brownfields. This is the big national Brownfields meeting, which won't occur till next September in 2015. So it's a little early to arrange travel arrangements for that, but They just want to let everyone know we are going to have a national brownfields meeting. And this is a great meeting. It's 3,000 or 4,000 people that not only just job training, but all the lawyers and all the remediation firms. It's a great place to meet remediation firms as well as other stakeholders in brownfields, both on the remediation side, the planning side, the insurance side, and the job training side. And what we also encourage people, and as the year goes on, as we find out about them, we're going to announce them to everyone, are the regional brownfields meetings. And these are fairly important because it gives you an idea of who the employers are in your community. Florida has been really active in this. They've been doing this. Florida has an annual brownfields meeting, and the nice thing about that is the Florida Brownfields Association, anyone who is interested in brownfields and remediation usually is either a sponsor or they attend it, and they have 300 or 400 people, but most of them are employers. So it's a great place in terms of your job placement activities to do that. This year, and we put it in the post-session notes, this year they're going to have one. It's going to be in Orlando and at the end of October, and it's going to basically be a regional meeting, and it'll have all the employers in the Southeast. So we're encouraging all the grantees, not just in Florida, or Georgia, North, South Carolina, Mississippi, going even as far west as you feel comfortable to attend the meeting to get to know the employers. And the other thing, and rationale for people coming from a distance, is many of the employers are national employers, and we're finding that more and more where there are firms like Arrow or Clean Harbors that are national in scope, and they need people for local jobs but for national jobs. So they're recruiting on a national basis. So it's really good to know who that person is. And usually the recruitment people go to the shows and to the workshops. So it's good to go there, not necessarily to see more of us that have common interest in workforce development, but to mingle with the employers and the remediators and collect cards that you could then make contact with later. And always introduce yourself as, gee, we're training people who have all the certifications that you may need, and would you be interested? And almost all the time they said, yeah, we'd be interested in talking to you. So it's a great way to make contact with those hiring your people. One of the things that I mentioned just earlier was the boot camp, and we'll put notes on how to apply for that in the post-session notes. It's sponsored by CCCHST, which is an acronym, Community College Consortium for Health and Safety Training. It's kind of a sister organization of us. They work with a large organization called PEAT, Partnership for Environmental Training, and they put on training in health and safety. And as part of PEAT, which is an NIHS grantee, is going to segue into one of the things I wanted to talk about today. It's a much larger program, and it's called the NIHS. It's a health and safety program. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that today because a lot of you are hearing about it. They just sent out an RFP, and I wanted to get straight what the difference is between the EPA Brownfields Environment, we now call it the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program, and the NIHS training program. And they're different, but they're subtle. They're subtle differences. They both started around 1986 with the Superfund Act. And originally, most of the money went to EPA. And but there was two parts of this. One was to train people in environmental remediation, but then there was a much bigger portion. Workers were getting hurt on the job. They were told by their employers to go down and clean up that ditch or clean up that tank, and they were coming down with critical diseases. Mortality rate was high. Accident rates were high, and there was a tremendous political push to fund some sort of program where we could train our workers to protect themselves. And right away, organized labor got on to this, and they pushed extremely hard because one of the one of the things that organized labor can offer its members is health and safety protection. And I think they saw this early on, and they said, you know, we want to protect our union members. It was something they could tell their members, this is a value added being a member of this organization. And they jumped on this, and they lobbied extremely hard, and they continue today. And it's a very successful program. To date, they've trained about 2.7 million workers. They train about 130,000 workers a year. And the money originally started going, it was sent to EPA, and then it was kind of subbed out to the NIHS. That's the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. It's part of NIH, which is the big doctor of the United States. You know, the NIH is charged with protection of the health of America. And NIHS is one of the subgroups in that big group. And its focus with protecting the environmental health of Americans. And so it was appropriate that this large amount of funds go to NIEHS, which is located where I am in North Carolina. And the idea was we need to train our workers how to protect themselves. And how do we do this quickly and efficiently? And this goes back to 1986, 1987. So immediately, the initial grants, most of them went to organized labor organizations. The largest grantees were laborers at the time, Laborers AGC, the Carpenters Union, Chemical Workers Union. And the rationale there was our members are captive. We have them. They come to the union halls. We're all organized. We are basically shovel ready to do this training. We can create the training and we can deliver it. And exactly that's what they've done. And they've done an excellent job. There was an argument that said, well, what about non-organized labor people? And this is where community colleges and universities also got into it. So you've got organizations like PEAT, Partnership for Environmental Technology. You've got OAI in Chicago. We've got non-organized labor groups in the South. And they are also in this consortium. Well, these are five-year grants by NIHS. They're huge, $20 million a year for these grants are appropriated, and they're for over a five-year period. Just in the last week or two, they went out with a request for proposals for the next five-year segment, and there's actually three parts to this, and there's the traditional hazardous waste worker training program, they call it. They use a lot of acronyms, so I hope you don't lose me, but I'll put this in the session notes. HWWTP, it's Hazardous Waste Worker Training Program. And this was the traditional program where we're going to train workers in health and safety. Whenever they're doing environmental remediation, we're going to train them in health and safety. Now, you're asking me at this point, that sounds like the Brownfields training program, our program. Well, here's the slight difference. First of all, our program in EPA is very small. It's 10 times smaller, okay? It's $3 million a year versus $28 million a year. The EPA program really focuses on remediation, and EPA programs, lead, asbestos, solid waste, wastewater, green infrastructure, it focuses primarily on remediation. But keep in mind, if you're going to do remediation, you've got to do health and safety. You can't remediate without protecting your workers. So you need to have health and safety in there. You have to have the health and safety programs. There's a tremendous, in the EPA program, again, it's much smaller. Our class sizes are maybe 20 versus, which I'll describe with the models used in the NIHS program, which are completely different. Ours are three-year programs, not five-year programs. We do a few cycles rather than a very big continuous type program. But again, as we're focusing more on remediation with focus on some construction and health and safety. The NIHS program is massive. We're training 130,000 people a year, And many of the organizations that are applying for this are almost like tentacles. They almost work, I wouldn't say as brokers, but for example, you might have international laborers, and they'll get a very large grant. They might get $5 million in their grant, but they're going to spread that $5 million over all of their affiliates all around the country. So they may have affiliates in almost all the states. So they're going to divide, and they have a training organization. So they're going to do that. You might have PEAT that has, it's non-union, but what happens is they've associated 100 colleges and trainers that are training, reporting numbers up through PEAT. And PEAT is providing logistics, train the trainer, training support, all sorts of training support organizations. So I hope you're getting the difference between these programs. The NIHS program are large programs that have many members as part of their grant. The EPA program is a single entity, very small. It's, again, focusing with local stakeholders and partners, much more intimate, much more not brokering out to multiple organizations, but working as a single trainer in their community with stakeholders and working very close to the vest on remediation with health and safety, where the NIHS program, these large programs, very heavily oriented towards OSHA, very much in the OSHA. And they're, and again, we're very much oriented towards the WIBs, the Workforce Investment Boards, the local communities. So you could begin to see the contrast here. We're not competitive. We're working together. As a matter of fact, the NIHS program, Sharon Beard will be at our annual meeting, and actually PEATE, which is has a grant through the NIHS program, will be putting on a session on health and safety to help our grantees and attendees get a feel for it. The two programs can work together. Where you have to be careful is NIHS serves on the review board of the Brownfields grants, of the EPA grants, and vice versa. So they exchange their reviewers. And one of the stipulations in their RFPs is you can't duplicate them, but you could be in the same city. You could be, for example, in Oakland, in Arch Angst's territory, and you could have an EPA program, and you can also have an NIHS program, be affiliated with it. It's got to be a different target group, a different community. So they can work side by side, but they can't be the same. So they can get some synergisms together, but they're not the same programs. They're different. They're different funded programs. They're different groups, and they work independently. So that's kind of the difference between the NIHS and the EPA program. The other thing about NIHS is there's actually three sub-programs in it. There's the big one, the Hazardous Waste Worker Training Program, and then they have a Minority Worker Training Program. It's called MWTP. They've renamed it this year to the Environmental Career Worker Training Program. It's more closely related. It's closer to our program than any of the others. It's focusing on underserved populations in communities that need training to get local jobs. So it's, I would say if there's a program that's almost identical to ours in another agency, it would be this Minority Worker Training Program. And many of our grantees have gotten funded from both of those programs. There is a third one called the Hazmat Disaster Preparedness Program. This is all under this big $28 million grant. And that's basically to be prepared for things like 9/11, Katrina, Rita, Sandy, the Deepwater Horizon, and now the earthquake in Oakland. When these disasters happen, our grantees are called. Do you have anyone? Do you have anyone with asbestos training? Do you have particularly HAZWOPR? We need 300 HAZWOPR training people right now. And so this program helps to address that issue. So for those of you who have seen this RFP and are interested in it, I'm going to put a lot of things in the notes about it. You can send in a letter of intent to bid on it. You could bid on it if you're interested, keeping in mind that how massive this program is. Most of the grantees are very well established, and they have many, many members so that they can report very large numbers of trainees. So I would keep that in mind when you're looking at this RFP. These two programs don't threaten each other. Right now they're independent. They don't really compete. We just make sure that they're not training the same people and getting credit and funding the same program. So I just wanted to, we've had several inquiries about NIHS and how that relates to our program. Is it going to replace it? No. Is it the same? No. Can I apply for it? Yes. Can I get involved with a larger group? And that's yes. And you may want to join up with someone who's organizing one of these. The big problem we've had in talking to some of the old NIHS grantees who are applying, they've been writing their grants for the last 4 months, and they say, actually, I've asked several of them, are you interested in partners? They say, well, after we get the grant, we may be spreading our wings a little bit, but right now, for the purposes of writing this grant, we're too far along already. That's how sophisticated this grant is. They're well into the grant writing process, even though it's not due till November, October, November timeframe. So does anyone, this is all about the EPA Brownfield Job Training Program, but I did want to bring this up because I'm sure all of you will hear about this program and wonder what it is. So I thought this would be an appropriate time to discuss this. Anyone have any programs, questions about that? Do we have any grantees out there that have participated in this? Okay. You may hear
will
about...
Will you be posting the location of that RFP just for people to look at?
We will. And
okay,
I've suggested that people may want to send in a letter of intent to apply and get the RFP. I think it's a great exercise just to find out about it. There'll also be a webcast, and there'll be a meeting probably here in the park, a pre-proposal meeting they usually have, where you could go to and they'll answer a lot of questions about it. I think it's probably a good idea to get a copy of it. I'll put a summary of it in the notes, and then I'll put all kinds of links to both this RFP and to NIHS so you can get a feel for what they're doing. So I used up most of the half hour we have, but one of the things I did also wanted to do today was touch on St. Nick's, Hunters Point, Memphis Bioworks, and Cypress Mandela. And those first four grantees that we had interview they're all excellent. They've all had previous grants. Some have reapplied and not gotten their grants and then kept at it and then were funded. But all of them have two or three re-ups, I call it, where they've been refunded because of their programs. They all have different problems and issues, and we'll be talking about this more in the future as we talk to future mentors, particularly when we talk about if you're located in a right-to-work state where there's not much union activity except on federal facilities, or if you're working in a urbanized area where most of the work is done by organized labor. And that poses opportunities, as in the case of Art Shanks and Cypress Mandela. He's extremely close to organized labor. He's got a pre-apprentice program. They're taking most of his graduates, bringing him into the union. And then to contrast that, we've got Hunters Point, which is they've had a grant, but it's brand new, and they're trying to get into the shipyards down in San Francisco at Hunters Point, and they're having a very difficult time breaking into the union because there's plenty of organized labor, a lot of union members on the bench. And when you go to the business manager and say, I've got 10 graduates or 15 graduates, I'd really like you to consider to bring them in for working, they're saying, look, I've got all these guys on the bench. How do I tell them that I'm going to hire you when they're my members and they're looking for work? And this is a real dilemma that Hunter's Point is up against. And We had the same situation in Brooklyn with St. Nick's. They've got lots of work up there, but it's a matter of getting into the business manager's office and developing these long-term relationships. Now, Art's been able to do it, but he's been doing this for about 12 years. So he's gotten to know them. And the way Art got into it is with the earthquake in 89, when the bridge collapsed, the union, they didn't have enough people to work there. They were looking for people. And it gave Art an entree into this. I said, well, we've got people. And we've suggested to those people who are trying to break into organized labor to contact the business manager locally in the union and acknowledge, you may not have openings for my guys right now, but that's okay. I'd like you to come to our program, and I'd like you to talk to our people about what you're doing. If you may not be looking for members now, but I'd like you to participate in our program, that's okay. And I'd like you to keep in mind our program so that in the event a big job comes up, you've got a ready source of trained people with certifications. So the way we try to approach organized labor when they're not real conducive to training is don't say, okay, don't close the door, they're not hiring us, but rather, can you get involved in our program and maybe you could teach us some things and just keep us in mind and develop that long-term relationship that Art has and get in through the back door. And it won't place people right away, but it might prove results later. Now, when we talked about Memphis Bioworks and Terry's situation where we don't have this large component of organized labor, she does something different. She organizes employer nights, and they belong to a forum where every 2 weeks they get employers together. Durham does the same thing here. They get the employers very much involved in the program. Not much different than what we're suggesting you do with organized labor. But they were asking the employers to serve on advisory committees. And when they hold these employer nights, they bring the students in. And they have actually the employers organizing the event. They get some of the employers who have hired some people, and can you participate and help recruit other employers? And pretty soon what you have is the employers get to know each other. They like to network among themselves. And so what happens is you get an informal group of local employers who kind of get to be friends themselves, have common interests, but are also interested in your program. And you get them to also lecture to your students to get them bonded as best you can to your students, so that, again, all of these things are dependent on them needing laborers, workers who are trained, so that they could come to you. They know who to come to bring your people in. And so they're quite different. And we're going to see in the next several presentations that it depends highly where you're located, what the placement situation is like. Sometimes it's easier and sometimes it's more difficult, and sometimes it's the economy and what projects are going on. That makes a big difference on what happens. How are things out in Clover Park, Christine? You always have run a great program. Have you found it, the local economy, picking up where you're placing your graduates fairly easily, or are you finding it?
Yeah, there's a lot of big remodeling projects. The Tacoma School District passed a multi-million dollar bond issue to do upgrading of the schools and lead and asbestos removal and stuff. So the Housing Authority is doing a lot of work that our students can get employed in. They're reactivating work out at the Point Ruston Superfund site. So, yeah, things are definitely picking up.
Are you highly organized labor or non-union?
Highly organized labor out here. Mm.
So you're able to put people into pre-apprentice programs.
Well, they don't all go into pre-apprentice. Some of the contractors on some of the jobs with smaller contractors aren't union, and so we place with those. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of work going on out at the Joint Base Lewis-McChord. that we have employers working out there that hire our students. We haven't really had a problem with the unions. I don't know why not. we haven't. But it's very labor organized labor oriented out in this part of the country.
Well, you know, even when you have organized labor in your urban areas, there's still, as you, I think you hit it on the head, there's still many small contractors who have a lot of work.
And some not so small.
Mm-hmm.
Some not so small. So, yeah, so we're managing to maintain a 70% or higher placement rate. So.
Excellent. Christine's got a great program, and she's presented several times at the PLC. One of the things I'd like to mention before we close is that at the annual meeting, we traditionally have the regional coordinators heading up our sections, and we've got a group of grantees who are just so good, like Christine, have deep experience. We'd like to have, we're going to try to get the grantees to act as mentors and facilitate. They don't have to make presentations, but to just head up some sessions. We'll probably use the regional coordinators as note takers, but just because they're so familiar with certain areas, and we've got experts. Christine is probably an expert in about three or four, almost all the areas that we talk about at the annual meeting. And what I would like anyone on the call or reading these notes to do is, if there is a area that you would like to facilitate, when I send out the post-session notes, if you could just send me a note back that, I feel pretty comfortable working with WIBS, or I feel comfortable with curriculum, or I feel comfortable, I'd like to facilitate a session on placement or something like that. We would really appreciate that, because what we're going to do is go through all the grantees, and we're going to select some, try to recruit people that have done a really good job in these different areas to just basically facilitate. We're not asking them to make a PowerPoint or any kind of presentation, but just bring their background and experience to the discussion. So, well, we've gone over our time for this week, but our next one's going to be on the 10th of September, and we'll have Fortune Society. Hopefully Laura will, I'll send Laura a reminder of that. Any questions or anything that people want to bring up before we close this week? Okay, well, we'll send out some post-session notes, and if you have questions, you could just respond back to those notes. We'll get them. Anything you'd like to talk about, let us know. Anyone in a transition and they've got some new people in new jobs, let us know. Let your regional director know, definitely, and see if you could get transportation to Alexandria on the 21st of October, and then from then on, it's covered by grants, but if you're not on a grant right now, if you can get there, the rest of the costs are minimal. So, well, everyone have a good week and a nice Labor Day, and we'll see you all on the 10th. Okay?
Excellent.
Thank you.
You guys take care.
Thanks, everyone. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.